everybody. Welcome to another episode of the OIG Roundtable. Eric Rubenstein, Senior Director of Fraud, Waste, Abuse, Litigation Support. Apparently, I'm doing operations these days, so I guess I'm doing all those. But it's great to have you here with my two partners in crime, Matt Kachansky, my counterpart, Senior Director of Payment Integrity, oversees all the SIU operations, retired Northeast UPIC Director, and retired SAC from the OIG, and Wade McFall, Director on our SIU team, overseeing a whole bunch of things, managing a whole bunch of projects. Wade, a lot of people don't know this, but Wade is a utility player. You're like the Aaron Judge of our team. You know, you're project managing, you're investigating, you just get up. Sometimes you're the DH, sometimes you're playing right field, sometimes you're pitching, sometimes you're on second base. Utility player. So as always, good to have you guys here. And we want to talk today about, this is kind of an SIU thing, but it works surely when we were at the OIG. And trying again, not to make these political conversations, but you know, every president has power to pardon people. And we're seeing a lot of pardons coming out of this. We've seen pardons coming out of other administrations. You know, every day you go online and you see the current administration has pardoned this many people, the same time last administration was this. We don't care about that. It's not the number of pardons, not the people. But obviously, when you see pardons of people who have been adjudicated as guilty from conviction after trial or something like that, and there's money that's owed, when an individual gets pardoned by whoever the president is, it's as if that case never existed. The record is wiped clean. Any overpayment, restitution, fines, damages, all that, it goes away. And people need to always understand that it goes away. So when you're talking about fraud, waste, abuse, and that goes away, that money is no longer back into the people's pockets, Medicare, Medicaid, or even commercial. You know, we go back, one of the largest cases that exists has to do with a guy named Esformus. He was in Medicaid, ran a bunch of nursing homes, $1.3 billion with a B in fraud, adjudicated guilty after trial by a jury of his peers. His sentence, he was pardoned, and that $1.3 billion went away. There have been a number of them. So there's a lot of money that's out there. But I think for us, the importance is, from an investigative perspective, it's just continuing the work and focus on the outcomes. We've all had instances where we worked on cases where the resolution wasn't what we expected. And that resolution that you expect to happen that doesn't can have very serious personal and mental health implications. You know, we've all worked on cases where you take it to trial. I had in my career, I had 9 trials. I had 8 criminal, I had 1 civil. I had a False Claims Act case involving Stark. It was the first False Claims Act case that anybody could remember in the District of New Jersey. And I worked with AUSAs who had been there for 30 years, and they couldn't remember a case when that had happened. And at the time, I think there had only been a handful of Stark trials in the country. So people just didn't really know how to work them. There were a lot of missteps by the U.S. Attorney's offices, nothing to do with me. As an investigator, we always need to understand that there comes a point when it is no longer your case. And as I'm trying to say a lot in a lot of my conversations, not my monkey, not my circus. It's not your problem. You've done the best you can. You know, I had an agent that I worked with and helped to mentor when I was in New Jersey. She went on a very long trial. The result was not in the government's favor, and she was emotionally devastated. And she kept saying, I lost the case. I didn't do a good job. And my response was, you did a great job. You got the U.S. Attorney's Office to prosecute this person, and that's what you did. And at some point, it's no longer your monkey. It's no longer your circus. And it's emotionally very draining, particularly if any of you have ever had any experiences with trials. You know, I had 3 trials in 14 months. Each one of those trials was about 6 weeks in nature. If I wasn't on trial, I was in preparation for trial. And it's very mentally challenging to stay that course. But Wade, it really does come down to, you have to focus on the work and not on the outcome. And in a management position, particularly, it's not just being a strong supervisor and a strong leader to encourage. And I think one of the things that makes you a great leader, for people that don't know it, is before you went to college and before you got into government service, you served our country as a United States Marine. And so you learned, but also had probably some implicit leadership skills and abilities, which were refined over your years, you know, in the space, in the government. But it's really about peer leadership, mentoring, supporting each other, And as a manager or a leader, it's knowing that it's not really, the work is important. It's not so much about the outcome or the resolution. It's staying focused on the job that you did and being recognized for the work that you did, right? While ROI is important and things of that sort, it's about the mission.
Yeah, I think to boil it down, I think the key really is to control what you can control, and things that are out of your control, they're out of your control. So you just have to do your job. I mean, as long as you focus on the work and not the outcomes, because those are many times out of your control, you know, you just have to, you know, you're well trained. So you should know, you know, part of your job, whether it's a agent or an SIU investigator, is to conduct objective, you know, evidence-based. We talk a lot at Advise about being impartial. You're doing that kind of work, it's, you have an unbiased approach, you know, transparency is key. All these things are part of your daily work in investigating a case. We used to, kind of a recurring theme when I had agents working in the field, was we would talk about, you know, do you want your actions or your decisions to be discussed in open court? So that's that whole integrity thing. It's like everything that you do is going to come out. So keep that in mind as you're working the case. Another, I think, key point, in which you guys are well aware of, but some people may not be if they haven't been through trials and things of that nature, is this, the whole idea of discovery. You're going to turn over your complete investigation, your findings, to kind of enforce the fact that you're looking for a full understanding of the facts and not, you know, any opinions you may have developed along the way. So again, this is the job, this is what you do. In the end, the rest of it is out of your control. You can't control what happens once it goes to court. And I think another key element here from a supervisory position is supervisors have, you know, when we're doing critiques and reviews at the end of the year, the outcome is always considered. You know, you're looking for ROI, and, you know, at the end of your career, you get a number on how many convictions you had, how much money, you know, in restitution, you get all these numbers. So those numbers are affected by something like this. As you said, it's wiped, the conviction is no longer. So that affects you in the long run, but you're, supervisor, you know, doing your reviews should take in the work that you put into it, the product basically that you handed over to the U.S. Attorney's Office, not what happened after that. So as long as you have you know, a supervisor who's doing your critiques and your reviews, you know, that can affect your raises, your salaries, all that stuff. So as long as you have someone who understands that and knows that once it's at a certain point, it's no longer your circus, like you say. So it's
right.
They take all that into consideration. If something like this happens, where it's a huge case, and you got the conviction, you got the restitution, so you're celebrating that. It might be your career case, the biggest case you'll ever work. And at some point, if it gets, you know, pardoned or whatever, that's really completely out of your hands, and it shouldn't. Easy to say, you know, don't let it affect you mentally, but it is completely out of your hands, and you've done the work. There's nothing else you could have done, basically.
And similarly, if, you know, forgetting pardons, I'm just using that as an example because we're seeing, you know, we've seen it in the news lately, but it certainly does lend itself to the discussion of that as an investigator, you might have rock solid information that suggests that the overpayment single damages number is $100,000, but there's a settlement for 30 cents on the dollar or 40 cents on the dollar. And that's totally out of your control because that's coming from people way above your, you know, way above your pay grade. And so, you know, that's, you have to take that in consideration. But this also just lends itself, Wade, and just for the final word on this, is that this is why having a well-documented case file actually serves to benefit you as an investigator. Forgetting, right, to an extent that the corporate mantra might be that you have to document every 30 days or do whatever. At the end of the day, part of documenting a case file adequately is for self-serving purposes of demonstrating to a manager or a leader, hey, you're offering me, you know, I'm having my evaluation. This is why I may not agree with it. This is why I think I'm better than what you're saying. Have you looked at this particular case or that particular case, right? So the documentation of a case can be self-serving, which is fine.
Right. And to take that a step further, going back to OI again, in those days, we would have, I participated in some of the regional evaluations where we would go and look at, you know, we're doing like an audit of the investigation. So we would look at case files and make sure they were properly documented. And cases that would generally be reviewed are cases where there was a not the best resolution. So those are going to be reviewed. You're going to have another, you know, agent or an ASAC or whoever review that. And that's where you say it's very important to have everything that you did documented, well documented, because that's going to be reviewed and hate to say it, but second guess, they're going to look at the case file and see if there's mistakes. They're looking for fault, basically.
Right.
So if it's well documented, you're not going to have an issue with that, really.
Right. And so, Matt, I want to go to you. We're a little bit short on time, but I want to get to you to talk a little bit. So a lot of this has to do with managing expectations at the front end with your investigators, and particularly for younger, less seasoned investigators who are always like full of energy and vigor. We sometimes have to manage those expectations, because when those expectations aren't managed at the front end, and we were just talking about this and we were kind of commiserating about our, you know, instances directly and indirectly of failure. And it really can provide a mental anguish, and having those expectations really does help to level set that to move on.
It does help. But I'll tell you, the human element at the end, when we are who we are and we do the things we do because we are the types of people that have an emotional investment in everything that we do. So there is going to be a letdown, but a good supervisor from the beginning should be mitigating that by I always start with, I don't care what the outcome is. I don't care if you find that the provider is completely absolved from any wrongdoing. That's a win. You did your job. And if you can show that you did your job well, that you brought the facts together and made a sound, supported, justified conclusion, whether that be, oh, this is worthy of referral or this is worthy of closure, that's the job well done. What happens from that point is irrelevant to what you've done. And you can say that, and it does help. But I've witnessed where, you know, people close to me lost a trial where it was one defendant. They'd already gotten 12 convictions of co-defendants through plea agreements who testified at this trial, but they got a not guilty verdict at the trial. It destroyed that agent for months, if not years, that what did I do wrong? Same that you talked about with the agent you were involved with. What could I have done better? What did I do wrong? You know, where did we screw up? Where did I screw up? And that second guessing, this is where the supervisor on the back end has to manage the expectations of the agent or the investigator at that point as well. So it's not just throughout the investigation, it's afterward as well, because those feelings do occur.
Right. And you know, Matt, from having been on the, you know, as the director of the UPIC, that the biggest issue is UPIC investigator invests months, if not a year or two, on an investigation themselves. They will refer it to OIG. OIG agents will go and do their piece of the puzzle. It maybe takes another year, year and a half. U.S. Attorney's Office monkeys with the case for a while. And then lo and behold, U.S. Attorney's Office says, we're not interested criminally. We're not interested civilly. You can't find anybody who's interested. And, you know, you get a letter back from the OIG agent saying, we're declining this case. Please handle
as
you deem necessary or whatever it is. And so, you know,
and by that time, the claims have aged out and then.
Right.
Yeah.
So I could see, like, you know, the exacerbation level, you know, from an investigator. You know, we say the UPICs are the Medicare SIU. From the investigative perspective, you know, I know that when the U.S. Attorney's Office had one of my cases for a year or so and then declined it, I would like lose my mind. Right. I shockingly, I would lose my mind. It's like, because you invest a lot of time, a lot of effort, a lot of energy to support the allegation or allegations. And if you're a reasonable investigator or agent, you know you're not throwing the baby in the bathwater out. You want to be targeted, right? You don't want to say he did these 30 or she did these 30 things wrong. This is what they should be charged with. Let's find the one or two things. But there is a level of exacerbation, and I could certainly see, you know, from the SIU perspective, it's equally, if not worse, because sometimes there's a lot of time without communication or what have you. And so managing those expectations becomes even harder. So, Matt, I'll give you the last word on this. What do you do to keep people focused on the mission?
You keep them focused on the mission by making their performance evaluation, making your interactions with them focus on the investigative activities, on how well they do X, Y, and Z, how well they do the interviews, how well did they put together the referral package, how timely were they able to do that, how well did they communicate that with the plan or with the Mifuku or the U.S. Attorney's Office. After that, it's out of, as Wade talked about, it's out of our control. You know, how those things are received, how those things are then processed by a party outside of the UPIC or outside of the plan or outside of the OIG, there's not a lot you can do. So you have to focus your attention right with your agents or with your investigators on the things that they are doing, right, and not the things that they want others to do on their behalf.
You know, and I'll leave it with this. I worked, when I was in Newark, I worked with a guy who was one of the criminal investigators at the U.S. Attorney's Office. He was the healthcare criminal investigator. Newark U.S. Attorney's Office had a team of four or five criminal investigators, and there was one in particular. And he would say all the time, and he was a former postal inspector and then went over, and he would say all the time, the sad part is agents are under a misconception that once the criminal charges are filed, that it's their case. And he said, you know, investigators need to understand it's not their case anymore. Once the and even in instances where the U.S. Attorney's Office has taken a very active approach, right, a QI-TAM, a high-level criminal case, whatever it may be, where the U.S. Attorney's Office is taking an active part in the investigation, investigators and agents need to realize that while they're part of a collective group, internal, external, whatever it is, at some point, you are no longer driving the bus. You're a passenger on the bus. And that is unfortunately the case, you know, in the just the way it is. But, you know, in the SIU space, it's just, it's the same thing. At some point, you've done your piece, and it's up to other people to make those final conclusions or whatever it is. So, you know, the takeaway is, we work in an inordinately frustrating environment. There are daily regulatory changes. There are almost to the minute new pieces of information to come out about new schemes. You can never just sit on your laurels and get caught up. It's just a mouse on a wheel kind of perpetuality to it. And so you just need at some point resolve yourself that you've done the best job you can and the outcome is not inherently in your control, as frustrating as that is. But, you know, it's almost every aspect of a job, right? At some point in every aspect of some job, the outcome isn't something that you necessarily have control over as an individual. The outcomes are oftentimes collective. And so I think that's, you know, that's the piece, is that you have to kind of think about it, but, you know, just keep showing up and doing the best job that you can. So good conversation. Good to have your insights. You know, you guys, you know, those that can do, those that can't go into management. You know, I say I've been here now, January will be 7 years. I clawed my way to senior management, and I'm hoping I could find, it's like an escape room. I'm hoping to find the escape room to get out of it. So, but you know, it is what it is. Keep pressing on, keep working. It's good to get your insight from you guys. I appreciate it very much. I hope everybody had a great Thanksgiving, and you know, we're wrapping up the year. We'll do some wrap ups and kind of see where that goes. As always, we appreciate everybody taking the time to join us, and grab our newsletter and catch our recordings on Spotify and our YouTube channel and such. And we'll see you on the next OIG Roundtable. Have a good one, everyone.
Thank you all.